You're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for April Baer. For many Michiganders, summer used to include a stopover on Boblo Island in the Detroit River. Trips to the amusement park island ended in the early 1990s, but folks still talk about carefree days on Boblo or riding one of the two Boblo boats, the Columbia and the St. Clair. Those two boats are the subject of a documentary underway, Boblo Boats, A Tale of Two Sisters. Within that documentary is the story of a woman named Sarah Elizabeth Ray, a woman hailed as Detroit's other Rosa Parks for her experience on the Boblo boats. Here to tell us more about Sarah Elizabeth Ray is Aaron Schillinger, the filmmaker behind the Boblo Boats documentary. Aaron, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
And Desiree, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, so what is it, Desiree, about Boblo Island that still resonates with Detroiters and people from the area who were able to visit?
You know, I think Boblo means summer. It just like that excursion that everyone could do. It was a common Detroit experience. And I have to make a true confession. I never went to Boblo.
What?
I know. I moved to Detroit in 1984. And I think it closed shortly after I moved into the area.
Yep.
And so I never had that experience. And yet I feel nostalgic about it because so many people have so many fond memories of going to Boblo.
Not dissimilar to riding the train in the zoo or perhaps taking the tram into Disney World. It was this way that you were literally transported to a different place.
Exactly.
So let's then talk about Sarah Elizabeth Ray, who had a harder time than those of us who are living and experienced Boblo as young kids, had a harder time getting there. How did you first hear about Sarah Elizabeth Ray?
So in 2006, I was a columnist for the Detroit Free Press, and I often got wacky doodle calls from people saying, "Have I got a story for you?" I got one of those calls. The guy sounded a little off kilter to me, like way too urgent, a little scattered. And he's like, "You've got to come meet this woman, you know, Sarah Elizabeth Ray. She's famous. She did so much for Detroit and nobody remembers who she is." And I'm like, "Okay, whatever." He called me a couple times and I said, "Okay, let me go check this out." And when I did and I got to her house, it was sort of like in that moment, I was realizing what was happening. That I, of course, had done some research ahead of time, and his allegations panned out that she had indeed integrated the Boblo boat. I mean, she was the Rosa Parks of the Boblo boat. And nobody knew about her. Nobody talked about her. And when I found her, she was very, very old, very, very thin, gaunt. It was February. Her house was cold. I don't know if she had electricity. She said she wanted to offer me something, but didn't have anything. So I don't even know if she had food. You know, I was worried about her. You know, she was completely forgotten by Detroit.
Desiree, you say in the film, it was clear to you she was a forgotten person. Did she feel that way?
That is a good question. I think she did feel that way because of the eagerness with which she let me into her home to tell her story. She was very anxious to kind of get it out and make sure at least one more person knew about it. I'd have to say more than that, I felt as she was talking that she was still on that pier. You know what I mean? Like time had sort of frozen in that moment. It was a moment she was never, ever going to forget. And Laura, not only was I not on the Boblo boat, she never went on the Boblo boat.
She never got on it.
She never got on the boat.
Wow.
And that was a point of principle for her.
Oh, because of the initial rejection.
Yep.
So let's talk about that day. Aaron, recount for me what happened exactly when Sarah decided she was going to get on this boat.
Sure. Well, this was back in 1945 when you used to get on the Boblo boat at the foot of Woodward Avenue. And she was with her graduating class. They were graduating from secretarial school. And she was the only African-American in the group. And the teacher had actually purchased the tickets. So Sarah was able to kind of slip into the crowd of her white classmates without really being noticed that much. I think she talked about the purser noticing the color of her hand. And so then Sarah was on the boat with her classmates celebrating when she was asked to leave. She refused at first, and then her teacher said, she'll go quietly, which that line to me just stings so much. It just feels like such a terrible way to treat somebody who, you know, you're supposed to be celebrating with them, and then you just throw them to the dogs, you know? And so then Sarah was forcibly walked off the Bablo boat SS Columbia, where she was refunded her money. And she told Desiree that she threw her change back at the boat. It was 85 cents, which was worth a lot of money back in 1945. But she didn't want to keep the change. And she called the NAACP. And that's when she started her fight, which would last about 3 years, which would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where she would win. And Bablo Island would be integrated.
Aaron, when did you know that this was an important story to document in the film version of her story?
In 2015, I started working on a full-length documentary called Bablo Boats, A Tale of Two Sisters, where we were following the restoration of the two Bablo boats, the St. Clair and the SS Columbia. And I was doing some research into the history because that's all we're following present-day people, but we're also looking at the history. And there was a little blurb on Sarah in a history book on Bablo. And then it just kind of mentioned that the park closed the next year. And it just felt like there was a lot more to that story. And when I researched online to try to find more articles, there wasn't much. Then about a year later, suddenly I found Desiree Cooper's article. And that's when I learned about the connection to Thurgood Marshall, and also her case's broader implications in ending segregation in public schools.
Desiree, this happened 75 years ago, which isn't as long ago as we'd like to think that this encounter would have happened. Talk a bit about what Detroit would have looked like and felt like, you know, just a few weeks or months after VE Day.
One thing that people don't realize is Detroit has had a long history of racial strife. It didn't all start in 67. And so in 43, there was actually a race riot on Belle Isle. And it was part of sort of a national conflict around integrating amusement areas and amusement parks. And so Detroit was not unusual in that regard, but it was kind of was in the bulkhead of the integration movement because whites definitely wanted their precious, pristine leisure places. And people of color were trying to get access to those places, even though they had forged, many had forged their own kind of idyllic places, like Idyllwild, Michigan, for example. So I think Sarah's case was very much part of that rolling history around how these amusement and recreational areas were going to be integrated. And so that is also part of the larger import of Sarah's story. One reason that this story happened successfully is because Michigan was one of the few states that had its own Civil Rights Act and prohibited discrimination based on race in public accommodations. And that is something that most states did not have. So even though Sarah's case went to the Supreme Court and she won, it did not automatically integrate all amusement parks. It just affirmed that you could not do that in Michigan.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Aaron Schillinger. He's a filmmaker working on a documentary about the Bablo Island boats, and also Desiree Cooper. She's a writer originally from Detroit. The timing of it isn't lost on me in that we would have just emerged as a country victorious from the European theater in World War II, and Black Americans in Detroit would have been the engine that powered the movement to create all these machines that were used by the government to win that war. Was there a sense of her timing that you can't just push the Black Detroiters that were still there. You can't just push them back into a box. They have been at the forefront of the arsenal of democracy, that they got the country through its most desperate moments, and that you can't just say, okay, we're all going back to normal. Was there a sense that the timing of this had anything to do with where Black Detroiters were as far as the war was concerned?
You know, more than that, you had the veterans coming back, you know, from Europe. So, you know, yeah, you weren't going to put them back in a box. And I do think that was part of the landscape. But I can't reiterate enough what an individual Sarah was. She had come from Tennessee. She was one of something like 11 kids. She had married and immigrated through the Great Migration to Detroit. And this is my editorializing. I think she dumped the guy almost as soon as she got to Detroit. And went to secretarial school, like, I'm going to be better, you know, I'm going to be better, and I'm here to be better. I'm here to transcend my life in Tennessee. I'm here to prove out of the 11 siblings that I'm going to be the one, you know, and she does it. She graduates, and so now she has credentials, and she's on her way, and when they ask her to get off the boat, it was certainly an insult to her as a Black woman, but it was also an insult to her as Sarah Elizabeth Ray, who is worth a lot more than that. You know, she was a little bit haughty. And I still saw that when I met her. You know, she was not an apologetic person. I think they just picked the wrong one that day.
In that context, Des, when we're talking about her as Detroit's other Rosa Parks, you're talking about some what I understand to be similarities with Rosa Parks' personality. But Rosa Parks set out to accomplish something specific, where it sort of seems that Sarah Elizabeth Ray fell into this. Would you say that's true, that she found herself in the situation rather than inserting herself?
Yeah, I do think while, you know, we talk shorthand about her being Detroit's other Rosa Parks in that she tried to sit down somewhere that was segregated and the ensuing fight changed history. Okay, so we have that as a huge comparison. But other than that, the comparisons start to fall away. I think that Rosa Parks was definitely part of a system. She had worked with the NAACP. She had worked on sexual assaults against Black women. She was already quite an activist. Her step into history was much more calculated. Sarah, like I just was saying, is, you know, they just tapped the wrong one that day. The wrong one and the right one, you know? Like, they had no idea that was going to flare up. And she may have known. I mean, how could she not have known that the boat was segregated?
Right.
But she was feeling her oats and feeling entitled. And I'm sure with her white classmates around her and her teacher supporting her, in her mind, she was going to get on that boat and have that party and celebrate what she had earned that day. So I think it was very much an instantaneous spark for her and much less a part of her being a system. I will say this, and Aaron has found some great documentation that might have sparked her to become part of more of a system of activism. She got involved with the communist movement and she had an action house on her street. So perhaps this was the beginning of her as a civil rights activist.
Aaron, what did you find in your research?
Yeah, back when we made the short film, there really wasn't that many pictures around her, but now I've paired up with a researcher, Des and I have paired up with a researcher whose name is also Sarah, and she's dug up some photos of Sarah, who actually changed her name to Liz Haskell when she got married to a Jewish man who was very involved organizing the labor movement in Detroit and also the socialist movement. So we found some letters and photographs. It just feels like messages from the past that Sarah's giving us that have just kind of been lost in time. So we're trying to do research to discover more about the community that she was involved in, of these like communists in the 60s and 70s in the east side of Detroit. And, you know, the stories are starting to emerge.
Did you get the sense that this Bob Lowe boat story was at all a nexus for that trajectory?
She must have had that fight in her the whole time, because she decided when she got kicked off the boat that she was going to do something right away. And, you know, one of the interesting pictures that we found is actually a picture with her and Odetta, who was an African-American singer who was also involved in the social justice movement. So I feel like she always had this in her, if I had to guess, but I can't say for certain because we never met her.
Aaron, because we didn't have many pictures of her, one of the avenues that you pursued was stop motion animation to tell her story. How did you know that that was the direction you wanted to go rather than just you using, you know, the limited photographs that you had, or, you know, some just general generic pictures of Bablo Island and the boats?
Yeah. So I worked with a stop motion animator and production designer named Beck Sloan. And when I found out that she did everything by hand, it felt like a beautiful way to give a tribute to Sarah Elizabeth Ray, who the history books had kind of glossed over. It just took hours and hours to make her puppet, and then even longer to make the set that we were going to animate her in. The fact that it was made by hand with recycled fabrics, it just felt special.
And how long did that process take of telling just a few minutes of her story in stop motion?
Well, the build time was a few months, but when we actually came down to shoot it, I and the stop motion animator and the cinematographer were basically in my bedroom for a month straight, you know, 16-hour days, maybe one day off a week if we're lucky, moving these puppets millimeter by millimeter.
Desiree, when we actually get her story in film here and now she's brought to life in this way, what are you hoping that people will take away from seeing her story played out like this?
Well, first of all, you know, especially in this moment, in this time where we are learning how cruelly miseducated we were about history, we really want Detroiters and the world to know more about the many forgotten people who brought us to this moment. And so that's huge for us. I think also Aaron and I have a secret hope that more people will come forward who knew her family, knew of her, met her, so that we can round out her story. I mean, it would be amazing if we could expand the 4-minute film that we have on her now into something longer, like a 30-minute that can be used for educational purposes and historical purposes. So it's kind of a twofer. Like, we want the piece of the story that we know out there, and we want those out there to give us the rest of the story.
Aaron Schillinger is the filmmaker from Sarah Elizabeth Ray, Detroit's other Rosa Parks. And Desiree Cooper is a writer from Detroit who really fell upon her story and gave it life in the newspapers. Desiree and Aaron, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more or see a screening tonight of the mini-documentary about Sarah Elizabeth Ray, you can check it out at DetroitsOtherRosaParks.com.